This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I'm your big daddy, and I want to be referred to as such.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
It's not fair.
I'm an Andrew Gunling fan.
Just take the L.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's Andrew Gunling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
That's right, ENN. Andrew Gunling filling in for Peter Rosenberg. He's off today and tomorrow. Much deserved. Very excited about this ENN. Michael, how are you?
I'm great.
And Don, how are you?
What?
What made you break tradition, Michael? Everything all right?
You know what? He says hello during Last One Standing, and then we answer. Sometimes, you know, the wires get crossed. I'm sorry. Say it again, Andrew.
Michael, how are you?
Okay.
I saw that's a very underrated new drop. All right, let's go right into ENN here with an NFL story. The NFL, for the most part, had been pretty much unaffected so far by the coronavirus pandemic, but that is the case no longer. The Hall of Fame game between the Steelers and Cowboys scheduled for August 6th and the Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony on August 8th, those have both been canceled and pushed to 2021. In seeing this, you can't help but wonder what the next domino to fall is going to be. For most NFL teams, training camp starts somewhere around July 28th. I was kind of wondering if that was still going to be the case, but Roger Goodell apparently said today that the plans are still for training camps to begin on time. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see if that actually turns out to be the case.
Well, I said this earlier on the show, Andrew. I was talking to somebody who's really intimately involved in the NFL. That's how I'll describe it. And he said, they're playing. No matter what, they're playing. Yeah. That's the plan. They are playing, and they're playing through anything. They're playing. But this is something that could be postponed, and it's not the end of the world. It doesn't really cost them that much money. I guess it's an ESPN broadcast, and maybe they give some money back. I'm not quite sure. But the bottom line is this is not going to stop the money train of the regular season.
No. But any other thing, when he asks the question, what's the next domino to fall, considering there are no fans – you would think in the buildings, you know, how do you attack the preseason? Like, do you do the four games? Do you maybe scale it down to just two? Do you try to just say, listen, why do we even have to bother, you know, just adding to the amount of games and what the players have to do and basically double our practice people, right? Because it's a game, but it's just a kind of scrimmage. You already got 16 that you got to deal with. Do you want an additional four that you have to deal with? And the travel that you're going to have to do twice.
But can you imagine if they don't play any preseason? I mean, what the first couple of weeks are going to look like?
Well,
I mean, just in terms of football.
But instead of, because I don't have the schedule in front of me, but where the Jets and Giants, you know, have their preseasons, but can you do something where the Jets and Giants just kind of play each other and scrimmage and try to find the teams that are in closer proximity so there doesn't have to be as much travel? You can scrimmage at the facility rather than going into the stadium to cut the travel down. Is that something that they would consider?
Yeah, that's a fair point. Michael, obviously I would never ask you to give up the source of who it is that told you that, you know, so emphatically that they're playing. But, like, I mean, the NFL has – it seems like the NFL has more hurdles to clear than any other sport, just given the size of each team. I mean, did they say anything about the plans, or was it just we're playing? Just
they're
like
playing.
A defiant – that's
they're
it.
They're playing. I mean, this is the NFL. I mean, this is the height of arrogance. And also, football players usually do what they're told. I mean, that's the whole thing about being a football player. You're told what to do, when to do it, at what time, the whole deal, and you do. You run through walls. I mean, the Junction Boys, I don't think happens in any other sport, Don. Nothing that you could get people to practice in that kind of extreme heat and just listen to orders. It's almost like the military.
But it's crazy the amount of people that you're going to be talking about, way more than any other sport.
Yep.
And with the preseason games, that's before you make cuts. So think about that. I think they've
got to have much, much more than a 53-man roster anyway. There's going to be more people than you think.
Right. So you're talking about a preseason game, which in effect is pretty much meaningless, right? No fans in the stands. The Jets' second preseason game is at Detroit, and the last one's at Philadelphia. So at Philadelphia is no big deal. But, you know, to fly to Detroit with what? How many people? 75? and the other team's going to have 75. It just is it worth it? Or do you just have
not.
I got to look at the
Giants. But it does have an impact on the quality of play. I mean, we all hate preseason games, but I mean, you would think they have to play a little bit.
Yeah, that's why
I see what you're saying. Play the close by. Don't get people on planes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, guys. Some NBA news here. After 22 seasons, Vince Carter announced on the Winging It podcast that he's decided to call it a career. Widely regarded as probably one of the most exciting players of his era. He ends his career as an 8-time All-Star, 2-time All-NBA, and he was the 1999 NBA Rookie of the Year. Prime years came with the Raptors and with the Nets. He ends his career with a scoring average of 16.7 points a game, but that average is probably, I would say that's really nowhere near representative of the scorer that he was during his prime years. From the time he entered the league with the Raptors at age 22 to the time he left the Nets at age 32, so that kind of 10-year window of his career, he averaged over 23 points a game. And then, he hung on for a while and kept his career going, and he was still productive, but the numbers later on kind of dragged
his averages
down.
Yeah, he changed into a role player. And the last shot he ever hit was the last shot he ever took. That was against the Knicks. It was a three-pointer, which he said he's thrilled about. He said, because if he had missed that last shot, there would have been something in the back of his mind. I want one more shot to make it, and he might have come back for another year. I don't know, Andrew. I don't know if you agree with me. He might be one of the best top 10 players who never won a championship.
Oh, my God. That feels like a Don list. Yeah.
That does feel like a list.
Oh, that's a great question. The way he hung on is really interesting to me. I've always been fascinated by it because I always felt like, him and Allen Iverson, who I worshipped growing up, they kind of came along at a similar time, and they were both, electric in the way that they played. But Iverson, I mean, he retired so long ago that he's already in the Hall of Fame while Vince Carter hung on. And it's because Vince Carter was just willing to do the things to prolong his career that Iverson never was. He changed his entire game. He was always an okay shooter, but he became a legitimately good three-point shooter in a time when he saw that that was a huge element of where the league was going, and it allowed him to continue making money for years, to get back into the postseason year after year as a key contributor. So props to him. I mean, people say he's a compiler, but he was productive pretty much right until the end. Maybe not those last 2 years, but right up until around age 40, he was still a pretty good player. So I give him credit.
He's a good enough player, Andrew, that if he wanted to play next year, somebody would have signed him.
Yeah.
I agree. He's not an automatic bad player. He's just a different player than he used to be. A lot of players don't take that step. He did.
Yeah, he won the 2000 slam dunk contest. Many people look at that as among the top two or three greatest dunk contests that we've seen. And he also holds the distinction of being the first NBA player ever to appear in at least one game in four different decades. That's amazing. That's never been done before. I was going back and looking at some of my favorite Vince Carter dunks over the years because, God, he's got so many. And I went with this one, which is actually not from an NBA game. This is from the 2000 Olympics.
Bonato gets with a sloppy pass. Carter inside.
Woo!
And the crowd responds to a spectacular dunk from Vince Carter.
Now you see why Frederick Weiss is going to go play in Greece. You don't want to see that on a nightly basis.
I think it was the first time that I had actually, in live game action, saw a guy jump completely over another player. And not just another player, but a seven-footer.
Right.
I know it was an Olympic game. It wasn't an NBA game. But to this day, it's one of the most incredible in-game dunks I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's on a poster in Frederick Weiss's child's bedroom.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So I'm just looking at his postseason, how close he even came to a championship. Was he even in the conference final? I don't think he was.
I don't think that he was.
The most postseason games he ever played in one season was with Orlando in 2010.
And what was that, 14?
14. So did they go seven, both, and not make it to the conference final? I got to look at where they ended up that
year.
Yeah.
I know he got close in 2001 because I was there in game 7 in Philadelphia when he missed a shot at the buzzer that would have sent the Raptors onto the conference finals.
They lost. He made it to the conference final with the Magic in 2010, losing to the Celtics in six. So they swept the Bobcats, they swept the Hawks, and then they lost in the conference final. That's the closest he ever came. So one conference final appearance. That's a long
Michael,
time.
You say, yeah, Michael, you put him in the category of top 10 players to not have a ring. Is he, I would have to really look at this. I haven't, admittedly, but just kind of like gut instinct. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
And I believe the length of his career also might put him over the top.
Well, what's interesting...
Yeah, I think I would agree.
He played a long time without going to the All-Star game. That's another one that I noticed. He went to the... He missed his rookie year, and then I think he went like eight straight times. But his last All-Star appearance was quite a while ago. He went to eight straight from... 2000, his last All-Star appearance was 2007. Never led the league in any category in his career. But
yeah, I mean,
how do you
I don't know if those are necessarily
1500 NBA games, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. To me, gut reaction, I think he is as well. A couple other NBA stories. A few players from the Sacramento Kings have announced positive tests for the coronavirus. Jabari Parker and Alex Len. Remember, the Kings are a part of the league's 22-team restart plan in Orlando. Jackie McMullen was on the Hoop Collective podcast talking about the restart, and she makes it sound like there are still some guys out there that are not overly excited with the whole thing.
I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm not saying that people aren't going, because the people I spoke with today, they are going. They feel a responsibility to their teams, and they're going to go. But they're hearing the anxiety in the voices of their teams, their players, and that's coming a lot too from their homes, from their families who are nervous about going. It's one thing if you're a player and you're like, yeah, this is my job, I'm going to do this. And then you're like, okay, honey, kids, we're all going to go. Wait a minute. No, I don't want to. What about my aunt? What about my parents? What about our son? You know, he has this, he has that. What about our daughter? And then I think all of these things have kind of built up over the last 48 hours. So even though they're going to go, I think the anxiety level, based on the conversations I've had over the last 3 or 4 days, has risen significantly.
Well, shouldn't it? Like, wouldn't you be kind of worried with somebody who said they don't have the slightest concern at all? They should be concerned.
Andrew put this in the pre-show notes that he gives us. Some Disney World workers are pleading with theme park executives to reconsider plans to reopen in July following days of record number cases of COVID-19 infections that have pushed the statewide total past 100,000. So you wonder, is the league considering or reconsider? I don't know where else they can do this, where you have that many courts and hotels in proximity where you can get as close to a bubble as I guess they want to get. But we're way out in front, because it could change. I mean, Texas has now required people to wear masks and stuff like that, so it could change. But right now, it's not a good situation.
I think that's what the league would probably tell you. All right, right now on June 25th, Florida is a mess. But they're not going to be starting until July 31st, a month from now. So a month from now, maybe Florida flattens the curve, and then there's another state. So let's say they decided to pull the plug on Florida because everything that's happening and decide to go someplace else. Then a month from now, that place is spiking, and then Florida's okay. I mean, we're still because the NHL plan was to enter their hub around the 24th or 25th, have a week of a kind of mini camp in the hub, play an exhibition game, and then start the season on July 30th. I would think the NBA probably do the same thing, right? Let the guys in about a week before they actually start. So we're still a month away from having to even report to the hub. A lot can change in that time, right? If they start wearing masks, do their due diligence, maybe they can flatten it out in a month's time.
Yeah, hopefully it changes for the better. I don't know. I mean, look, I love every sport, but basketball, football, I'd hate to see these sports not come back, but like golf, it feels like was made, you know, for a situation like this. Like golf was supposed to be the one sport that could kind of stand up and not really be all that affected. And now I'm seeing an article at golf.com today where a journalist is calling for the PGA Tour to be put on pause after Brooks Koepka and Graham McDowell and, you know, other guys have been forced to pull out of competitions. I mean, if golf is having a hard time doing it, but, oh my God. I mean, what does that say for basketball and football and baseball?
But you're kind of looking at it the wrong way because they're not in a hub. So did they contract the virus on the course, or did they get it when they went home? That's why I think baseball is a bit of a concern. But I think from basketball and hockey, the point is once they get in the hub, then they should be in pretty good shape. I don't know if any of these golfers got it while they were playing in the tournament itself.
Also, I don't quite understand the cry to stop it, because if you look at the amount of golfers and the amount of tests, there aren't that many that have tested positive.
But
I mean,
I think
it's reasonable. It's certainly. I mean, Mark Canizero had a good column in the Post today. What are you even thinking about stopping it for?
I think there's
a shock
value.
Now you just
value.
Get better at, you know, at staying safe. You know, you increase how studious you are about staying safe.
I think there's a shock value to hearing a positive test. And I think people have to kind of get over that, because these sports from the very beginning have said, we're not going to let positive tests stop us from moving forward. Now, a hospitalization, a death, or a certain number of positive tests may change that. But, hey, we're going to have opening day, Michael, right? What day is it going to be, 24th, 25th?
23rd or 24th.
I wouldn't be surprised on that Monday when we come on the air, we're going to be talking about somebody having to get pulled because they were positive. I would almost guarantee it.
I think it's part of the new narrative.
That's COVID-19 is going to go down like a significant injury that'll keep you out 2 weeks, because that's what'll happen. That player will be pulled off the field, 2 weeks in quarantine, then he'll come back.
Yeah. Let's see. Today was actually supposed to have been a big day for the NBA and the Knicks in particular. Anybody know why?
I would think today would have been a draft.
That's right. This would have been, under normal circumstances, NBA draft night. Obviously not anymore. I think it's been put on hold until October. In case you forgot, just to, I guess, remind people of what would have been, New York has the sixth best chance of landing the top pick, so not super likely. I was looking at ESPN.com today. I kind of went semi-deep getting back into this, and they listed 19-year-old Denny Avdija as a potentially good selection for the Knicks. He's a small forward, Israeli-Serbian descent, playing in Tel Aviv in the Israeli league. So go on YouTube and check him out if you're curious. I was on there today. He looks good. Obviously, everybody looks good in their YouTube highlights. There was one comparison to Luka Doncic, so I guess take that for whatever it's worth. You hear those comparisons thrown around a lot with European players of his similar size, but he looked pretty good. So, you know, just a name to put in the back of your mind once we actually get to real draft time.
And tomorrow, the NHL draft lottery is going to be held in New Jersey. And because the teams that are playing in the preliminary round, the loser is eligible for the draft, they'll be designated a letter. So say, I don't know what the Rangers Hurricanes letter is, but let's say it's letter F. If F wins the draft lottery, then the loser of that series would be the first overall pick. And the other teams that missed, they're in the lottery as well.
Wait, the first overall pick will go to that?
If they win the draft lottery.
Oh, I gotcha.
And I don't think they'll know their letter, I guess, when they play the series, because then that would be odd, but... Yeah, because
So you won't. I mean, they're gonna. I mean, the question's gonna have, who the F is that? So the F won't know who it is,
right? Because the thing is
thank
that
you're all week.
15 teams are in the draft lottery that missed the playoffs, and since this is the preliminary round, the teams that don't make it should be in the lottery.
Gotcha.
It's all very complicated. The NHL was actually thinking of holding the draft before the playoffs even started. That's how crazy things have been.
Huh. In baseball, Rob Manfred spoke with the Associated Press, and he addressed, I guess what you'd have to say is, the poor standing that his sport is kind of in right now from a public perception standpoint. He said, quote, we need to get back on the field, and we need to, in a less charged environment, start to have conversations about how we, and the we in that sentence is the commissioner's office, my staff, the clubs, and the MLBPA and the players, can be better going forward. We owe it to our fans to be better than we've been the last 3 months. So what does that mean? Any suggestions how they can kind of start winning people back?
They can't be worse. There's no way it could be worse. They accomplished what we felt was impossible. They made a terrible time in our world's history be even more distasteful. They did it. They somehow did it. A pandemic, millions of people going to be dead, obviously millions and millions in this country unemployed, and they made it worse. That's a pretty hard one to do.
Very hard, but they accomplished it.
Yeah, and then there's this. Yesterday we were talking about the coronavirus and the impact in some states, like Texas, where the governor there declared it to be a massive coronavirus outbreak in his state. That was yesterday. Also yesterday in Texas, Jim Crane said he is still planning on having fans attending Astros games in Houston. I was reading this in the New York Post. He said that's the plan, he told reporters on Wednesday. We still have to go through the player protocol. We're still focused on that. I think the intent at some point is to get the fans back in the ballpark. In fairness to Crane, he's not alone. The Rangers have also been talking about that, the Texas Rangers, as have both Chicago teams. The mayor of Miami and the Marlins are working on a plan for fans to return. So, I mean, obviously I like the idea of fans being in attendance at sporting events. Games, you know, aren't quite the same without that atmosphere. But, man, the numbers surging in some of these states, it just – I don't know if it just feels to me like the wrong message to be sending right now.
Aren't the Marlins used to playing in front of no fans? Here all week.
But
Michael on fire.
We had this conversation before. Just how unfair would that be? That some teams can have fans, other teams can't. Baseball's got to say, if no one can play, if nobody can have a fan, then everybody.
Yeah, but they're going to turn down money? Because they'd be turning down money. And aside, have you seen the new Ranger ballpark?
No.
I saw a picture of it today from the outside.
It's like they went to LaGuardia Airport, right, and picked the most dilapidated airplane hangar that you could possibly have and said, okay, this is the outside of our new ballpark. Did you get that vibe,
so,
Andrew?
So, Michael, I wonder if you saw the same tweet that I did, and I hate the fact that I can't remember who sent it, but somebody posted a picture of, like, an initial artist's rendering of what the ballpark was going to look like, and there was a beautiful kind of park outside with, like, places for people to congregate and sit, and it looked really, really nice. And then he posted, alongside the artist photo of it, the actual picture from that vantage point of what it looks like, and it's just concrete. It's just a parking lot. There's no grass. There's no green space, nothing. And he posted something that said, boy, the Texas taxpayers really got taken for a ride. I mean, I'm sure inside it's nice, and it's probably state-of-the-art, but from the outside, you're right. It just looks very ordinary. It doesn't look like what the pictures said it was going to look like.
It looks so utilitarian. And then when you consider that ballpark is maybe 100 yards away from Jerry World, which is breathtakingly beautiful, even on the outside. So forever, it'll be the ugly duckling and the gorgeous right next to each other.
I don't know how you ever in a million years want to get a new ballpark wrong. You're spending so much money, right? You want to get this right.
Maybe they don't care how it looks outside. As long as Andrew said, maybe it's great inside.
But I think it's all part of it, right?
I think Chase Field in Arizona is hideous looking, too. It looks like an airplane hangar. It's the same thing. It's almost like the same design.
Yeah. And then finally, guys. it has the pool, but I guess aside from that. Finally, on this day, this was actually a big no-hitter day in baseball history. In 1999, Jose Jimenez of the Cardinals pitched a no-hitter in a 1-0 win over Randy Johnson. In 2010, Edwin Jackson pitched a no-hitter. Do you guys remember that one?
Vaguely.
But for some reason, it holds my a bunch of walks.
149 pitches, 8 walks, and just 6 strikeouts. But he did throw a no-hitter, so you can't take that away from him. And then Don, you probably remember this one. In 2014, Tim Lincecum threw one on this day against the Padres. It was actually his second straight season in which he threw one against them. He did it in July of 2013 as well. So three no-hitters to speak of on this day.
The arc of Tim Lincecum's career. 2 Cy Youngs, 2 no-hitters, and that's it. And he fell off a cliff.
And, also won 3 World Series.
Yeah.
It was very short. Yeah. That's why you can't anoint players as Hall of Famers, right?
Like, would you say, Don, that his career arc is freaky?
Oh, my God. Michael, he can't stop.
He really
well, that
can't
is it stop. For ENN tonight, guys.
You know what? And a manageable, Michael, right? When was the last time ENN ended before 6:30?
Very, very rarely. Very rarely. I mean, it's but it, to Peter's defense, he doesn't talk throughout the whole show. This is his time to spread his wings.
Oh, so Andrew talked, what, for 3 minutes during the trivia?
Yeah, but Andrew doesn't have the ego of Peter.
No, who does? Who does?
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.